Order the meeting of the Board of Directors of the Travis Central Appraisal District. We have a quorum. The first item of business is election of officers for the Board of Directors, chairperson, vice chairperson, secretary, treasurer. And so I would open up a discussion and, about it. Topic.
You're sitting down. I would nominate James Valadez for chair.
Okay. Is there a second to that? And are there any other nominations? Okay. All in favor of electing James Valadez as chair, say aye.
Aye.
You're elected unanimously.
Okay. Sorry about
that. You go ahead.
Okay. Second item on the agenda will be citizens' communication.
Well,
we still have
two more.
Yeah.
Two more to elect.
Tom, what's the finish with the elections?
Okay, then turn it over. Okay. Then next would be a open up nominations for vice chairperson.
I don't know if you can stay in the same position.
Okay, is there a second to that?
Second.
Okay, my motion and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. And open up the floor to nomination for secretary treasurer.
I nominate Jimmy Sapp for secretary treasurer.
Yeah, I would say.
Any other nominations? All in favor say
I
aye.
I don't know if you'll accept. That was a surprise.
Okay. Well, Teresa, why don't you switch with James? James, switch with me, and we'll go on.
Congratulations.
Right. I take my lunch.
So the second item on the agenda will be citizens' communications. Bill Fields.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, an opportunity again to introduce myself as the chair for the ARB. I'm Bill Fields. I'm in my sixth term, so this last time you see me this year. I just want to review that we have 41 new members. We have a total of 141 members on the ARB, and in the next week or so we're going to ask the judge to get 9 more applicants for this year to fill it up to 150. We've had 9 resignations over the last 2 months. And also, I wanted to tell you what the training for the ARB is going to happen. New members are February 11th. Old members are February 12th. We're probably going to, and we're doing both of those at the J.J. Pickle building near the domain. And you all have any questions?
What are the hours for the training? Is it all day?
Training is, for this one, all day, each day, 8:30 to 4:30. And we're going to do individual training of the new members in the next months or so. Yes?
This is your training.
Yes.
It's the comptroller's report.
Comptroller's training.
Is that a day?
1 day for new members, 1 day for old members. And that's the only place that can, around here, that they can put that many people from. With that, thank you.
Okay.
The next speaker is Ken Martin.
Good morning, board members. I'm here to once again ask for a little bit more transparency. We have speakers here because I filed the Americans with Disabilities Act complaint with this agency a few months back. I appreciate you having the mics. I appreciate it even more if all of you would lean into them when you're talking. I really couldn't hear who was elected. I see where you're sitting now, but I didn't hear all the election results. Mr. Ruby, are you still the vice chair? Thank you. Okay, I could not hear that. Y'all were leaning back, and I don't know if the mics were on or not, but I couldn't hear it. What I really came to talk about this morning, very briefly, is that after a complaint was voiced at the last board meeting, y'all have are now audio recording today's proceedings. That's great. I emailed Ms. Martinez, your communications officer, last evening, and this morning she quickly responded and told me that to get the recording, I'll have to file a public information request. So I've already done that. But I'd like to tell you that that's, I don't know what century y'all are operating in, but every agency that makes a recording puts it on the Internet and makes it readily available without having to file a public information request. If you're interested in transparency and the public being able to find out what's going on at these meetings, then I suggest you put it on the Internet. When I asked why, Ms. Martinez responded to say that the IT department is trying to figure out the most efficient way to put it on the Internet. I've operated a little rinky-dink website for 10 years for the Austin Bulldog, and uploading an audio file is no different from uploading a PDF or a Word document or anything else. So I fail to see why it can't just be put up on the Internet and let people who may be interested in what y'all are doing here have easy access to it. Thank you.
The next item on the agenda will be the consent agenda. This includes the approval of the minutes for the December meeting, the taxpayer liaison's report, the section 25.25B report, the accounting statements, line item transfers, and personnel report.
I'd like to pull 5A and 5C.
Any other pulls? Do I have a motion to approve B, D, E, and F?
Motion to approve. Second.
Okay. Should we get the taxpayer liaison report. Look, we hear 5B now. I'm sorry. So we'll do 5A. So we'll get a vote on the motion for approval of. Yeah. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes. Yeah. Back to the minutes. Do you want to?
On the meeting minutes, on item. Policy. As Ken Martin was just alluding to, we approved the policy, and I made a motion that we approve the policy with the update to TCAD to add the recording and to include on the website. So I don't think it says add to the website on there, so I would like to amend it with that clarification.
So the motion is to add that language?
Yes, okay. To post our recordings on the website. It's part of our policy.
Do I have a second?
We would need to add the board policy to our next meeting as an agenda item.
Okay.
For making that change. Can't do it through the minutes, but we can put it on our next agenda.
I think what he's saying is that he did say that
at
the last meeting.
Okay.
And that's my recollection.
Okay, so it's a correction of the minutes, not a new motion. Okay. I'm sorry.
Right.
Okay.
Right. We talked about it. Everybody agreed that we should have it. So it should be made easy. Every other government entity does provide.
But it's recorded, so your motion should be recorded.
Yeah, it does say that it's recorded but not posted to the website. So I said stated in my motion to be posted on the website also. It's just not reflected in the minutes.
Yeah, and I was saying if you said that, it would be in the report.
Right.
Oh, but we didn't record it last time.
Recorded.
Yeah.
Now it's going forward. I wasn't here.
Yeah.
I get you.
So I would move to approve the minutes with the update to also post the recordings to our website. That's the only change.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes. Five C.
On the 2525B report, I do see that we added a new column, NOAV market. Can you just say what that is exactly?
That is the value at the time of the notice of appraised value.
Okay, and then the current market value is what?
Is currently on the system.
Okay. I see for most of these, they're essentially the same, except for very few. So is the change that was being made just that the exemption changes? Because it's not really clear on all of them. Some of them don't say anything as to what was changed.
And there's we're doing some additional training with our staff on that specific place in the system. And there's two places where you can put comments, but one where it will show on this report. And we've got some staff that are putting the comments in the wrong place, but we will get that corrected for them. But majority of the changes we get are either being added or removed, or percentages being corrected, mobile homes and exemptions, corrections.
Okay.
But if you've got any specific ones, we can give you additional detail on those specific changes if the comments aren't reflected on this report.
Yeah, I just see some of them were blank. But most of them, so if there's no change in value, it's really just exemption changes?
It might be an ownership correction, things of that nature, legal description updates,
and
entities.
One of them that goes back to 2015, how far back can you typically make the change?
Under 2525B, there is no specific time limit for going back to make a correction under 2525B.
Okay. All right. I move to approve 2525B report.
5C has been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes. On to the regular agenda now, 6A, discussion and possible action on 2020 protest season process, including informal meeting process, recommendation from board member. Ryan.
So at the last meeting, Mr. Steglich had submitted his recommendation, and the board wanted to use that as a platform for today's discussion and recommendations from the chief appraiser. So I've included in the packet the letter recommendation that we got from Member Steglich at the last meeting, and then the recommendation from the chief appraiser for 2020, using that as the platform to move forward. Generally, we're required to send. Well, if you want to take public comment first on this item, agenda item, if there's any public comment before I get any further into it.
I didn't see any.
Okay. So, generally, the appraisal district, we are required to send our notices by April 1st of any given tax year, and then we turn the records over to the appraisal review board generally by May 15th. And so the opportunity for the informals, I think, should occur between those two debt timelines. But in reality, because we have to give 15 days notice on sending the letter for formal hearings to start, that May 15th really should be extended for the extra 15 days that's required for that notice. So we're making a recommendation that the informal time frame should be between April 1st and approximately May 29th. And then the ARB hearings and the records will be turned over to the ARB May 15th with a first hearing start date of being June 1st. That approximately splits the season in half, approximately 8 weeks dedicated, a little bit more than 8 weeks dedicated to the informal process and 8 weeks dedicated to the formal process. So I think it's a good compromise in terms of how to allocate time for those purposes. Historically, you guys had requested some historic information, so I gave you historic information going back to 2005 in terms of the number of informal meetings that we held. That you also asked for what the average change was at those informal meetings, but I will have to say that the average change is skewed a little bit, and it can be misleading. High changes skew it. If you got really large volume changes, we also have things like personal property where we get late renditions that will skew the change. We also have residential inventory that is pretty large reductions, that is a large quantity of changes at large reductions that kind of skew that average number. So I wouldn't use that as a guidepost for recommendations of changes. Looking at our informal meeting capacity and the number of hearings, again, our last year that we did informals, we had 87,000 informal hearings. Looking at our capacity based on the number of days that we would have this year, knowing that owners take up a little bit more time than perhaps a tax agent would, we think that we would have the capacity to handle 89,000 informal meetings during the time frame that we're recommending. So that's within the threshold of the volume that we've had to take care of before. It still recognizes that owners take a little bit longer than agents would, but the numbers come out approximately as we would expect. Some of the complications that we would see would be that there are some outside organizations, such as the Board of Realtors, that train and advise the public, and they advise them to delay filing their protest until the very last day and to always try to get in and be the very last one heard, and that creates problems. It's a strategy that cannot be accommodated by the appraisal district. Everyone cannot be last. We need people to come in as early as possible. Because not all protests will have been filed, advanced scheduling of informals would be difficult for the appraisal district. So we're going to have to do it on a first-come, first-serve basis, maybe looking towards other models like the DMV for early reservations for property owners to come in and reserve their times. But we just have to make them be aware that, you know, wait times may be long depending upon what kind of demand we get on any one given day. And then we'll need to do intensive public outreach to ensure that property owners are aware that they need to start coming in for their informals to come in as early as possible. Again, if everybody waits until the last day, then the wait times and our capacity is not going to be functional, but try to get them in as possible, as soon as possible. And then also not to have multiple informal meetings on the same property. I've got capacity for 89,000. That's assuming we don't do two hearings on every account. So we need to make sure that we're only doing one informal meeting, and then if we can't resolve it at the informal, we move on to the formal hearing. But I do think that based on our time, we've got time to make that recommendation. The board had asked me if there was a potential percentage for management approval, and I would say that there's no one given percentage that we should mandate. Again, we don't want to give the impression that everybody that shows up gets a reduction just for showing up. We do need to make some changes in the way that we operate on informals. No informal settlement should be made without documented supported evidence. There should be no coming in and just to get rid of you, you get a discount. It should be based on some documented evidence. Once our CAD supporting evidence is created, we think that the appraisers should have free rein to make whatever offer the evidence suggests. But if there's any other offers that need to be made, that's something that needs to be at the discretion of the director divisions and the team leaders in those departments. And they need to look at, specifically, we want to look at the skill set of the appraisers and their knowledge and to determine whether or not they need additional approval from managers or team leads. We also want to make sure that we're implementing procedures for review and oversight of any reductions that are being made so that they're being made consistently and fairly across all property owners. And we have to keep a very close eye out on conflict of interest issues. And we've had quite a few conflict of interest issues that have come up where staff has reported that they've been made offers of jobs or pressured to make a reduction, and if it goes bad for them, told that they would have a job with a tax agent if they just went ahead and made those kind of reductions. So we need to make sure that we've got controls in place to make sure those kind of things are not occurring. The informal meetings, reporting, we don't record the informal meetings capacity and just in terms of the storage space required and the logistics of having to put that on every informal meeting would be pretty difficult for the appraisal district at this point.
Maria, has it been a historic fact that there have been multiple informal meetings on a single property?
Yes.
How does that happen?
They will, and we call it appraiser shopping. Somebody will come in, talk to an appraiser about a property, not like the results that they're getting, and come in and take it to another appraiser and see if they can't get a different result by talking to a separate, different appraiser.
I guess I was under the impression that you got a single informal hearing on a property, end of the story, but okay.
No, we have the shopping happening, so we need to cut that out.
Let me ask you another question, going down to the potential percentage for management approval.
Mm-hmm.
The second bullet, a settlement offer up to the evidence-suggested amount. Now, mm-hmm. Is that the evidence-suggested amount by the TCAD appraisal?
TCAD evidence, yes.
You might want to be a little more clear there because mm-hmm. we've under the impression there are two bodies of evidence being offered.
Yeah, I think we will pre-create much of our evidence. If our evidence is indicating a reduction, our appraiser should make the reduction based on what our evidence is stating. And they should have the authority to do that without getting management approval because we should have already, in theory, vetted all of that evidence. So we don't. I don't have a problem with them being able to have the latitude to do that. But I do think, you know, again, putting strong controls in place so that we can make sure that we're doing it fairly, consistently, and we don't have conflict of interest issues are key for us.
And are you thinking a value change would happen within that meeting, or is it still going to go through the process where the online settlement is offered?
I think the value change could occur within that meeting, again, depending upon the conditions, what the managers and directors feel, the skill level, the knowledge level of that appraiser are. They may give some appraisers more latitude than others. I think it would happen at the meeting just for efficiency's sake. But any offer that we would make at that meeting would be something that would also be available online so property owners could go home, think about it, and at a later time choose to accept the offer electronically rather than coming back for a formal hearing.
I will say that's one of my biggest concerns mm-hmm. is that if you're opening up the ability to change an offer within a meeting, you're opening up ability to abuse. Someone's going to sit there. Someone's going to, you know, and from our staff perspective,
yeah.
I don't want to open that up. It's kind of like, you know, you get your blood work somewhere where you got to meet with the doctor later on. And afterwards to find that out and get your results. So I'd be much more comfortable if the offers were delivered separately, either via electronically, and then that also lets everyone make sure, hey, if this property is going to change, well, maybe these other ones, we need to take that into account too. Or how do you?
What was your thought process in evaluating that?
What I got as a sense from the directors from the board at the last meeting is that you wanted to see something happening at the meeting. Again, for us, for concerns on consistency, fairness, and avoiding a conflict of interest, it would be best to have them separated. But if the board's desire is that we resolve them at the time of the informal, then these are some parameters that I think we could work within as long as we can have very strict oversight and control over what's going on and a lot of review to making sure that, again, they're being done fairly, consistently, and that we don't have those kind of conflict of interest.
Yeah, she is saying with evidence. So they have the data. If the appraiser is looking at the data and finds that, yes, it should be lowered, these are certified appraisers, right? We should let them do their job at that time. I think it's more efficient for our taxpayers to have the decision. And if it's above a certain threshold, she hasn't precluded going to management for approval. But if the evidence is there, they should be able to do it. They're all certified in what they do. So I don't see...
But I have to stress very, very highly that we are really concerned about conflict of interest issues.
You've mentioned that in the past, and I wanted to come back to that because mm-hmm. I think that that's something that really stuck with me is how difficult it is to maybe not be swayed by personalities and that sort of thing. And I think the two-step process where you go, you present your evidence, and everyone, you know, regroups and you get your offer later, it wouldn't that disallow kind of another round of arguing or, you know, more evidence now? And it just, I don't know. I'm torn by the efficiency argument. And then
I don't think that'll be efficient. I mean, let me ask about the process just real quick. The numbers that you state here for the number of informal, is that include face-to-face or face-to-face and the online?
Those are strictly face-to-face.
Those are just face-to-face.
Strictly face-to-face.
Okay, so what are you recommending going forward as the process? Because in the past, they could only get a face-to-face if they filled out the form, mailed it in, versus if they completed online, that was their informal and they didn't have an opportunity. So is that distinction still the same, where if they submit their protest online, they don't get a face-to-face, or can they still request a face-to-face if they submit online?
They can submit online, and they would still be able to come in for a face-to-face.
Okay. That's a little bit different than how it was a couple years ago, right?
Yes.
Because if you submitted online, you didn't have a face. So they have the option. They can still submit, because I think we should encourage everybody to submit online and then check a box if they want a face-to-face, or a lot of them might just want to do it online, right? But that option was there. So they have the option to pick face-to-face or just purely online. And then if they choose online, you would schedule them to come in and they can present their evidence.
If they want to go online, they can go online, submit their protest. If they're within the time frame that we've got before June 1st, they can come in for an informal. Again, we'll try to create a system similar to DMV where people can come in and reserve time and time slots. But again, volume will dictate how long of a wait time that we might have in that process, because it's just impractical at this point for us to have the ability to schedule the informal. So it'll be on a first come, first serve basis for the informal process. I think that, again, the conflict is a real concern for us. I had HR do a real quick look for me. In the past 5 years, we've had 15 staff members leave and 12 have gone directly to work for tax agents. So we have a lot of intermingling of staff and moving over. A lot of staff is being recruited while they are employed with the appraisal district. And we just cannot have any, we need to have some more oversight to ensure that we don't have anything inappropriate occurring.
Can you speak to the education piece as it pertains to getting the information out to the public? This is obviously a new process, so what means we're going to bring forward to ensure that they understand how this will flow?
Yeah. So we will start early with our informational sessions with property owners, just like we're currently doing with our homesteads. A lot of press releases, a lot of media contact. We will do town halls, and we will also include it as an insert in the mailer with the notice of appraised value, more information about how to participate in the informal process. But that's specifically the kind of things that we've gotten Cynthia as a communications officer on board to assist us with, is getting the word out so that property owners are aware of what the process would be this coming year and so that they can take advantage of it.
Ms. Krigler, so what I hear you saying is that no one will be scheduled for the informal the way that it used to be. It would get a day for the informal and a day for a formal. Regular folks will have to just come and sit, people that work 8 to 5, and so the only time to come for the informal for them would be for them to take a day off of work to come to and sit to see if they can be seen that day.
Well, which is why we're looking at doing a system similar to like DMV does, where you can come in and you can reserve space so that you get priority when you show up. When you come into the office, you'll get first priority to come in and meet with the staff. But we just won't have the information in order to schedule informals.
So you will have to come first and schedule a time ahead of time?
They can schedule. Mm-hmm.
But they could do it online.
They could do it online.
Okay.
Yes.
But not everyone.
True. Correct.
Yeah. Has
yeah.
a computer and computer savvy, so we have to be mindful of that.
Yes.
Okay. I just want to be sure so that I can tell people what they need to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, our biggest recommendation is come in early, start early. Everybody wants to wait and be last.
Understand. It's okay if you're self-employed.
Mm-hmm.
You can come in and sit, but the majority of our folks are not self-employed.
Yep.
They work somewhere, and if they don't go to work, they don't get paid.
Yes.
And so that is my concern with the way that we're proposing to do the informals.
In the past, how accurate were our appointment times for informals? Because I believe that for the ARB hearings, they were not accurate. But you could have thought your appointment was 10, and
you could wait, but the wait time, because before I was on the board, I did a lot of informals on my properties, and the wait time was no more than 15 minutes.
Okay.
If you had your appointment scheduled, and you came in and you were seen.
It really depends on the volume that you have on days when the ARB is heavily scheduled and we have a high show rate, because they try to factor in an estimate. But even for informals, even if we schedule them, how many people show up, you know, you always have to overbook because you don't know how many people will show or won't show. And so it can vary. Again, I think that when we did it the previous year, we did a walk-in Tuesdays and Thursdays where property owners just came in and walked in on Tuesdays and Thursdays starting afternoon. That was the most preferred method because they knew when they would come in, they could just walk in when they wanted to on whichever Tuesday or Wednesday worked out or Thursday worked out best for them. There was no question about trying to reschedule informal meetings, and so the walk-in basis was the one that was most preferred and most requested from property owners when we did the last set of informals.
Can we do any Saturdays for informals?
We can incorporate a Saturday.
That's a good compromise. Mm-hmm. I kind of am drawn to the idea of, like, when you go to the DMV, there are different, like, if you're here for this, you pull the tag, and then certain mm-hmm. windows serve different things, and I think that could increase, efficiency, like commercial, you pull a certain tag, because it's only going to be certain appraisers can deal with that, or, I mean, I kind of like that. I think it would make sense to people.
And then we will probably do, maybe have specific days for owners versus specific days for agents, specific days for property types. Maybe commercial has a day or two when all staff resources are dedicated to those purposes. We'll have to look and see what the admixture would need to be.
I would say that does sound more friendly to have the taxpayer schedule it than TCAS scheduling it, because it always seems like, hey, you have to come on this day. It's like we are dictating versus now the taxpayer can go, oh, I'm available here, and they book it. So I don't see a problem with that. That should work out, as long as people don't wait till the last minute.
So what I'm my intention in writing this is trying. We know how important face-to-face communication is, and
yes.
We've heard that from our constituents. And so I wanted to make sure in our process we allowed for that and allowed for that information sharing without giving people who had time to do this or chose to do this an advantage over someone who can only do it online or works and not at all. And I do think if we're allowing values to change place in a closed-door session in an office that's not recorded between two people, there's a huge potential for that being abused. Now, Anthony, I know we want to make it expedient, and I think it's fair. I would hope you'd understand if it's fair that information that appraiser sees that, hey, oh, there was an error here, or there's a correction, or this value makes sense, gets shared with the person making the final decision, and then that person can get their final appraised value. Doesn't have to be in that meeting, but within a time frame that's acceptable.
I would like to think whatever the process is, it's the same whether it's face-to-face or all online.
Exactly.
You basically present the evidence, and if it's face-to-face, you can make a pitch, but the appraiser should just be looking at the data, saying, okay, I believe your data, and putting it into their model and arrive at a value. Whether they see them or not, or they're represented by an agent, or they just submit it online, they should be able to do that. I would like to think that once people start doing the online system, they'll realize I don't need to go face-to-face. If they present the data, it should be black and white, and they put it into the system and send back their result. So, but the face-to-face is critical from a perception standpoint because people want to feel like they're heard. Not everybody has a computer, and people think when they just throw the data over there, nobody is listening to it. So really, to bring back face-to-face is to let the people, our community, know that somebody is listening to them and it's just not behind a computer screen that we're trying to accomplish, and to make it efficient. But if we can't arrive at some type of value at that time, I think the taxpayer will be very dissatisfied that, hey, I gave them my message, my data, and I have to wait later for it.
Well, I think what I'm hearing is, yeah, the information gathering and the listening, like, that's really important. That's what our constituents want.
Yeah.
If we didn't give, if we gave a value change similar to what we do online, like when you submit online, the value just doesn't come back. A reviewer has to review
right,
it. There may be secondary review. You just know that by the 15th or whatever that final date is, you will have an offer back. And I think if that can go into the same process where the person can submit their information, staff, especially if it's homeowners, can help them make sure that gets in the system properly, so then they all can be reviewed similarly and have the similar process, whether it's in person or in line or online. So that meeting is really more of an information gathering session. I think there would be a lot of education that needs to take place for people to understand that, no, the value won't change right now. We need to have it go through our full system along with everyone else because we are held to equal and uniform. And that makes sense in making sure everything is balanced. And that would take out that ability for it to be abused or for people to who can't be there to have to deal with that inequity.
Maria, what's the time frame you're envisioning on getting an offer? So from when you walk out of the informal process, how quickly are you envisioning that offer being sent?
Electronically?
Yeah.
We try to do a 5-day turnaround on all electronic e-files that we do.
Okay.
So we look at a 5-day turnaround on the same thing. I would think the same should apply.
Would that be the case also in an, if you had an informal hearing?
Mm-hmm. We, again, we're looking for direction from our board. We could do it either way. I think that there are some safeties that come with doing it separate from the at the time. But if we put specific controls in place, we could also accommodate at the time.
And I don't think it has to be an either or that you're choosing online or informal. This is just an extra level of communication and information gathering. Because whether someone submits a protest online or in writing, there's going to be electronic record of that protest that goes through our appraisal system.
The difference, Ryan, is that when you do an informal and you're sharing information, you submit your documentation as to why the value is incorrect, and then the appraiser has their documentation, you can do it back and forth. And then if you don't come to an agreement, then that's fine. But in the appraiser, you don't have a chance to come back and say, well, look at this other property and where it's at in relation to the subject property. So folks will feel better if they can come to a resolution at an informal. If you can't come to a resolution, then you opt to go to the ARB.
Can Can you explain a little more that scenario you're describing? It sounds like that person would end up at the ARB also.
Not really, because if there's some documentation, there's some sales data that the district will not have, that I will have, that Teresa will have, because we have access to the MLS, and the ARB and the district does not. They will not have sales data that we could have.
Correct. Okay. So in that scenario, I think you would share that sales data, and the appraiser would say, okay, yep, here's this sales comp. Here's how I would interpret this. Now I can enter in notes that say, hey, reviewer, when you're reviewing this property's value, take into consideration this sales data. It's attached to that property, and then you'll get your answer within 5 days, just if you submitted it online.
The argument for waiting is that we're hearing from our chief appraiser, and we've heard it as long as I've been on this board, I've heard that there are situations where the appraisal staff is being influenced to...
That's totally different than...
No, it's not. I don't understand why it's different. Because what having a slight delay or having a moment where you reflect and somebody...
I'm not an agent.
Right. But the rules have to serve homeowners and agents.
Correct.
So
they represent homeowners.
Well, a couple of things. Yeah, go ahead and explain a little further, perhaps.
Yeah. The other thing is that when there's, for example, and I will give you an example with the neighborhood that I moved into. All the data is incorrect in terms of square footage for each house for the entire neighborhood. So a lot of the folks that don't have the correct square footage, they're not going to come before you. And I will have to, or me or anyone else that has it wrong, you have to come and bring it and show it to the district. Then the district cannot come back in 5 days because they have to go into that subdivision and find out exactly what is going on.
Okay. So can you...
The developer usually submits floor plans. And that's how the appraisal district knows what the square footage is. In my neighborhood, there are houses that are over 2,000 square feet on the books at 1,600 square feet.
So in that scenario, if you brought in the correct square footage, how would you get an offer across the table? Like you're saying the appraisal district would have to go look. So that's going to take time.
Because they have to verify what I said.
So how could we make a decision that day?
I'm saying no. It's going to be a delay of more than 5 days. They cannot come back in 5 days to give you.
But I thought you were advocating for making a decision at the table.
I know, but I'm telling him that in 5 days, in that particular case, you cannot do it there.
So it would be.
But in most cases, you can.
I think you're saying you would like to see results that day at the settlement, but there's instances in which you're not going to be able to even meet it within a 5-day window. Is that right?
Correct.
You know, the whole purpose of having a face-to-face informal is to arrive at a settlement. So if they can't make a decision at that time or have a clear indication of some type of settlement, might as well not have that. And what she's recommending now is that allow them to make a decision with data. You know, they're trained, they're qualified, they're appraisers. That's their job. But if it reaches a certain threshold, then management does need to approve it. So I think we're saying the same thing. You know, you weren't here, Ryan, but we said maybe at a percentage. She doesn't want to put in a percentage, but I think once she weaves out the process, she'll realize, well, if it's greater than, say, 10%, then...
That triggers.
Yeah, it triggers something else. But if it's 2%, 5%, 7%, does it really matter at the end of the day? I think it would be better for the taxpayers to have some assurance that, okay, I went there, they agreed with my data, and it's settled. I'm not going to go to ARB, I'm not going to sue, and it's done and over with.
Well, they would get that with the offer. Or whatever the final offer is. What I'm asking is for a separation between that happening from the meeting, which is information gathering, and the actual review and decision making. Now, the one question I have is, if they're not presenting new information, why would the value change?
Well, yeah, if they're not presenting any data, then there shouldn't be any change in the value. Yeah.
So they're going to be presenting new information.
I would hope
it's going to be collected in this thing, right? And now you're saying sitting across from the desk, that appraiser immediately has to interpret that information, check everything around, see how it impacts it, and makes a decision while someone's sitting across the desk like this.
Okay, how about this?
Staring. I don't think that's a fair situation for our staff.
Okay, how about this? What if the data is already presented there? They upload the data in the informal, and then they have the meeting to review it. And if they're coming to the meeting with data, then there could be a delay. So can they post the evidence before the meeting?
Yes, if they file electronically, they can upload their evidence in advance of the meeting.
And then the meeting could be a review instead of submission of new data, and they can arrive at the settlement. So in the process, it's, hey, if you want a settlement at the hearing, you pre-submit your data so that you guys get a little bit of time to look at it. And then at the meeting, it's just a review. And if they don't, then...
So let me ask you this, Anthony. You've been through the protest process. When you were at the ARB, if you just submitted data and weren't allowed to speak at all, would you feel like you would have a successful experience? I think you need to give some context, right?
Sure, sure.
Some more information.
And I did submit
so
mine online.
You can't say that the appraiser has everything they need once they've gotten the information to make a final decision. What I'm saying is, at that meeting, they're going to gather information, and they deserve to have some time, either on their own or bringing in other staff, or even having a secondary reviewer, so we can have a fair system as if someone just submits it online with their notes versus someone submitting online and meeting with it. I don't want additional leverage being there just by sitting in that meeting and trying to make someone leave by giving them a percentage.
One more question. How many properties or parcels were settled through online this last protest season? I see that this is all configured on face-to-face numbers. So what this grid is showing is 89,000 can be, we have the bandwidth for 89,000 person-to-person. But what's the number that was settled electronically?
I would have to look that up for you.
Okay, because that's additional bandwidth that we're not in. When we talk about that WIC for how long the process is going to take, we're simultaneously settling.
Off the top of my head, I recall about 34,000, but I need to verify that for you.
That's pretty substantial.
The judiciary had to deal with this in the appellate level, and what that used to be, you had oral argument on every case when you appealed it. The courts then decided that, well, if nobody wants to have oral argument, just submit all the briefs, they can have that option. So I would think that if you have, when they submit online, that they have a box to check that they want an informal hearing to give context or whatever, they can do that. And then after that informal hearing, if the examiner, I mean the decision maker, wants to have a 5-day period, or I don't care if it's longer, to before he renders a recommendation on the informal, they get that, and it's not done that day. Because I think you're right. I think doing it that day is just, and will end up being abused.
Yeah.
Any further discussion?
One thing that I'm thinking of with this is, when we receive the online notice, the person receiving it doesn't make a decision immediately, right? They do review it, and it takes time.
Yes.
So how would that be available to them during the informal hearing? The face-to-face? Because it does take time to review what the person submitted. So
well, when they submit it online, it's in the system, but at
some point,
somebody takes it and looks at it.
I'm talking about the people who don't submit online, but they do want an informal. And you want them to get a decision there and then. But we're saying that there's a process already in place. When somebody does submit evidence online, that happens. And it's not like, okay, I got it. I know my decision.
I was offering a compromise to prompt people to submit their data online first. If they do that, they get a settlement at the face-to-face. If they don't do that, then do as Ryan has suggested, that we can't guarantee a settlement. We're going to have to review it because you've only given us the data at the face-to-face. So it's kind of a hybrid approach for having settlements at that face-to-face or not. If they give us the data ahead of time, then we can just review it and give them a settlement at the face-to-face. If they don't, then we can delay it.
Why wouldn't they just do the... If, in that hybrid approach, though, if they're submitting the evidence online, why don't they just accept... Like, there's something they want by coming in.
Yes.
And I think by having that settlement offer waiting for them when they sit down at the table is going to minimize what they're looking for.
The idea is we want them to use online. I think
but that didn't work this year.
Well, we'd like them to use online. If they get a settlement that they're agreeable, they check it. They don't have to go face-to-face. But then if they don't agree, they check a button, I want to talk to somebody, then they go and do it.
But then I still think there would need to be a waiting period because they've already received a settlement offer. They don't agree. They're going to want to talk about it. And then we're back to the whole, I think good decisions are made with reflection, and that appraiser they talk to would need time to come up with a change in the offer, if one's to be made. I mean, you know, like it's either we're going to allow appraisers to make split-second decisions, you know, 10 minutes of talking with someone and here's your offer, or we're going to say this is something that bears,
I think
it's
we
something
should allow
important
it, but it sounds
that,
like some of us don't think it's a good idea. So I'm trying to reach a compromise here.
Well, we are going to have online opportunity. Like, I would never come into an informal. I would just submit online. That's my preference. So that's still going to be available.
Yes.
Okay, where are we? Any further discussion? Do I have a motion?
Well, I'm not sure what the motion is at this point.
I don't think you have a motion.
Ryan, you didn't think
and a suggestion I might make is that perhaps, Mara, you and your staff could put together a recommendation that actually could be in the form of a motion for approval to bring back to us that would incorporate what you're hearing here. Now, you may want to say, what is it I'm hearing here? And, you know, you might want to ask some questions about that. But I don't think what I have in front of me right now is in such a form that I can tell what I'm making a motion about at the moment.
Well, she has a recommendation here, and I think we all agree that we should have an informal process. But the decision to allow the appraiser at that time to make a settlement, we might be split. Some of us want no decision to be made, a waiting period. Some of us want to allow them to make a decision. So is that summarized where we're at?
So,
I think you can have that. All you have to do is say that a decision will be made within 5 days after the informal hearing. It can be made at the hearing or within 5 days. And you allow that opportunity for reflection. I'm just worried that we are going to set up a situation where our staff gets intimidated if we force it to be that day.
I think what we need to do is set up like a series of straw votes based on the items that, as a body, we want to see in the process. So one of them, off the top of my head, would be if we offer a settlement on the spot, if there is a hybrid process, all those key items. And so if we can...
Saturday.
Yeah. And so that way we're at least giving some level of direction on what we want to be able to take a vote on, or if it can be edited, what's been presented to us based on what we have here in front of us.
That makes a lot of sense.
So does anyone want to recommend the key items they would like to see, and then we can proceed with some straw votes for direction?
My straw vote would be for the position Tom Buckle just articulated a moment ago.
Okay.
Now, Tom, can you clarify, is there a situation where an appraiser could change it at in that meeting?
Yes, he could. I mean, if we're talking about rational decision makers and professionals, if somebody has a compelling case they're able to present online or supplement at the hearing, they'd be allowed to do that that day. But you're letting the staff be in control of the process. Mm-hmm. If they want time to reflect, they can just say, like a district judge does, I'm taking this under advisement and make it the decision.
Mario, can you speak to what a reasonable number to attach to the discretion of the appraiser would be, in your opinion?
I don't think that we should attach any number to it. One, we don't want to say that there's a guarantee of any settlement offer of any amount. There may not be any settlement. Again, it's based on the evidence and the documentation that we see. There may not be a change warranted, or staff may not feel that there's a change warranted. So I don't think we should go in there with a number that is that can be used as a perceptive default that everybody gets just for showing up. I think that that needs to be something that the appraisers and the management team in the divisions needs to determine if there's going to be one or if there's not going to be one. And again, that needs to be based on staff experience, knowledge, and the division director's understanding of what's going on at that point in time.
It's hard to deny something that everybody's going to feel decent about. I had a client come in today. He said, boy, I went online, I got a 20% reduction, just bam. I'm always going to go online and file a protest. Mm-hmm. You know,
And if we do state a number, like, say, 10%, somebody could say, hey, you can just approve 10%, and that's their target. So that makes a lot of sense to not define that.
Yeah, I think
it should be based on the evidence.
Can we go back to what Tom was suggesting, that it can be a settlement at the table or up to 5 days? Like, you're going to get an offer if one is coming now or up to 5 days. I worry about setting the expectation that it could be now and still running into the situation where homeowners are, you know, they're frustrated that they're not part of the now category. Where if we say it's within 5 days, then it sets the expectation. You're not going to walk out of here with a number.
I think
you are going to have to wait. Like getting your blood. I like that analogy.
I think
like,
that goes back to the education piece, though, because so much of the community is accustomed to getting those settlements immediately, so conveying that to the public is going to be key, so that expectation isn't there.
I prefer the hybrid system because you'll know ahead of time that there might be a settlement there at the time that you meet with the appraiser, but maybe there isn't. There's more information that needs to be acquired.
I'm concerned that it puts them in the same situation. That even though they say, oh, you know what, it's 5 days, no, you can do it today. I know you can do it today, you know? And then it's like, if you leave that little window, it can't. What's that?
Have you done that at informals?
Have you personally done that at an informal, she's asking?
Yes.
No, but we've heard stories, anecdotal stories about that. And then people are sitting in a seat that don't have to leave until they decide they want to leave.
That might be more of a training with our appraisers.
I'd be open to potentially errors and omissions. Okay, if this is a clear, this says 5,000 square feet and this says 2,000 square feet and you present me a deed, like that's different than arguing over the comps.
I'm going to even suggest though, I mean, let's say it was something like that.
Yeah.
2,000 square house being taxed as a 5,000. Well, okay, you can edit that, but you still have, how do you calculate the value right there properly, accurately, with time? I mean, I think
you look at the value of the other house in the neighborhood of 2,000 square feet.
So now we're doing this work right in front of the public when we've got 80,000 potential protesters. But are we trying to improve something?
Right.
I mean, why are we going backwards? I mean,
we're not going backwards. Opening the system up again. That's what we're doing.
They are able to make a decision. I did protest at the ARB, and she put in my comps, and she arrived at a lower value than I wanted. So the computer system really does it. And
And they do this all the time.
Yeah.
So a 5-day review period, I don't know what that really
Why would it be, is it fair to have a 5-day review period for protests that are submitted online when informals you get an answer? Like, are we encouraging more informals face-to-face by giving them an answer immediately when online is a 5-day waiting? That's not fair.
But we're not saying you're going to get an answer immediately. You might, but the possibility is that you might have to wait.
The word within is not time specific.
Correct.
You do within 5 days. All I want to do is put it back in the staff control rather than any system that allows the staff to be abused or intimidated.
Well, I don't want a system to be abused, and I know it has been abused.
Oh, it has.
Yes. I mean, when I was in ARB, I saw it.
Mario, can you speak to Tom's recommendation about whether you think that opening up, if they have some ability in that meeting, would open up potential for abuse versus not having that ability in there?
I think that all comes down to the strict oversight and review that we have on the work that the appraisers are doing. Again, we've allowed enough flexibility within the parameters that we've dictated that we can have team leads and managers available and ready to do reviews. But I do think that review and oversight, consistency, and fairness need to be key factors that we consider in developing the policy. We hear often from property owners that, you know, why did my one neighbor get a greater reduction than I got, and our houses are very identical or very similar. And I think with review and oversight, we can create better consistency across appraiser interpretation of data. Gives us an opportunity to also create better training opportunities so that we're ensuring that our appraisers are interpreting the data consistently as well. And again, my key factors are I want to make sure that we've got consistency, fairness, and good oversight over the process.
Mara, with your cookie cutter neighborhoods, that's the easy part. It's your neighborhoods, the older neighborhoods, where everything is different. And now the gentrification that is introducing newer homes and multiple homes in one lot, that changes the whole landscape.
Yes.
That would be an argument for not making a decision on the spot.
That's right.
As opposed to a cookie cutter neighborhood, right?
Mm-hmm. And again, there could be areas. Again, we can. I think the division directors and managers are closer to the actual appraisals that are being done. They know which neighborhoods are more homogeneous that can have immediate offers made versus those neighborhoods that would not be the same. They also know which appraisers are brand new and in the infancy of their training that need more oversight, and then those that have more experience. Even though time does not necessarily mean that they are better appraisers, we need oversight even on some of the people that have been here long term. And so I think the managers and the directors are closer to it and are better able to make those decisions. I would anticipate to begin with, it'll be very strict controls, very, very tightly controlled as the managers get a better feel for the staff, the conditions, the data. And then if they feel at that any point in time that it can be expanded and opened up, then they have the latitude to do that when they feel it is appropriate.
Can you talk to me about, with this 5-day window, as we go towards the back end of these informal hearings? And so we always talk about this backloaded nature of them.
Mm-hmm.
As we transition from informal to formal scheduling, we're going to see that influx scheduled for informal meetings, and we're going to have that WIC of 5 days that could bleed over into that formal scheduling process. Can you illustrate how that looks transitioning from? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
That would be the point in time where we have a lot of staff overtime.
Yeah.
Working to make that work. We could, you know, again, supplement our staffing roles. We've got a lot of new positions coming on the books this year to add additional appraisers. We may be able to supplement that staff with some additional staff members that can assist. We may have some retirees that might be available to assist us with them, you know, even with the review portion of the process, but it would require more resources on our part as the backload becomes heavier to still try to maintain that 5-day. That 5-day may have to slip.
Yep.
Just depends on the volume. It's very hard to predict that.
And to that point, when we switch to having formal, do we have to have a deadline when informal stop? Couldn't you also have some informals while the ARB hearings are happening?
I think it would be best for us to be able to dedicate our resources to the formal process as we have the formal process going forward. It's better for the ARB that they have more predictability in the volume that they've got as to whether it needs to be scheduled or not for a hearing, because we've resolved it, and we know that those that have been resolved informally are already done before we submit the records and turn them over to the Appraisal Review Board. I believe it works better when we separate the two.
But nothing, there's no statute that prevents us from having informal at any time, right?
There's no statute that would prevent it.
Okay, so you could do that. If we needed to be more flexible. Right now, generally, we say informals end now, informals go ahead, but you could have an informal at any time.
Yeah, my recommendation is we have defined periods for each process.
Sure.
My comment would be from just a kind of news standpoint. I think if some people get changes to their value at their informal meetings and some people don't, people are going to ask, well, why did I get it and you didn't? And that's going to be a big issue. So I'll just say from my voting standpoint, I prefer to either vote we do it all there for everybody or we don't do it all there for everybody. I have concerns about the hybrid model, even though it makes a lot of sense.
Well, it's just come from a practice of law where judges can clearly see a decision. And they make it right there.
Right.
But most of them, what to do, what Therese was saying, take the evidence that they've received and reflect on it before they make the decision.
Yeah.
So
I think in this recommendation, these informal meetings are more of an information gathering session. So could you talk about if we just had them open from April 1st to May 1st? And then between May 1st and May 15th, staff had the window to make any adjustments to property and then get that out in time for the ARB meeting. Is that, as I'm understanding process, does that make sense? Because I'm trying to get all the information gathering to happen, whether it's face-to-face or online, and then let your staff make any adjustments necessary, and then people proceed from there.
Certainly would add consistency.
Yeah, we could do information gathering and I would recommend a longer period of time. So I would
That's
say
fine.
From April 1st through May 15th, and then take the time from May 15th through June 1st or maybe a week past that to do the final level of review and recommendation. It would help us ensure consistency in the offers. It would help us ensure that any data that we acquire through the informal process, such as sales information that is favorable to property owners, can be utilized not only by the property owner that submitted it, but also could be considered for other property owners within that neighborhood that may not have incorporated that data. And it would give us an opportunity to do that as well. We would just have to work on the logistics for our staff in terms of how much time it would take us to do that final review, make those offers, get those all uploaded online. I don't think that there will be a problem overcoming the logistical issue. We just have to think it through.
The worst case of that, I presume, would be somebody who would wait a month and a half to find out what the decision was.
Yes.
Yeah, which I don't think is probably acceptable either. Yeah.
So I would be up for voting a straw vote on that recommendation. It sounds like you would still need to kind of think through the operational, but
which recommendation is that?
The motion is that.
Yes, the motion is that we would have informational meetings from April 1st through the 15th, or whatever dates make the most sense. April 1st through May 15th, and then from May 15th through June 1st. Any valuation changes would be made then, and so therefore evaluation changes would not be happening in those information gathering meetings.
Now, there, what I would like to see is that, because you never know the case as well as when you first hear it, that your appraisers can go ahead and make their decisions, but it's just not, it's not revealed to the taxpayer until you can be sure that everything's consistent with each other, so you don't have all this random, he gets 20%, no, he gets 5%.
Yes.
And I think absolutely.
Yeah, the recommendations would be made at the time, notes would be taken, documentation. Would be taken. Yes.
If they don't accept it, then they go to
formal.
Yeah.
So you know how many formal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that way,
so it's totally different.
To Teresa's point,
clean, though.
To Teresa's point, you can route those things to the, if it's a commercial, and maybe a commercial person wasn't available to meet with them face to face, those notes and things can get routed to a commercial person to make the changes.
Yes.
So just to lay that out one more time, you're talking about
April 1st through 15th, both on, May 15th, April 1st through May 15th, both online and informational, informal.
No offers
during that time.
Okay.
Correct. This is all information gathering.
And then what?
And then from May 15th through June 1st, the appraisal district reviews any of that information and reviews the requests for adjustment and makes those adjustments, and then that'll be sent out either electronically or whatever format, you know, if it's by mail, however they submit it. And then they can either accept it or deny it, and then we'd move on to ARB.
Refresh my memory, when would ARB hearing start? Like, what's the month?
So we are required to turn the records over, submit the records to the ARB by May 15th. It takes 15 days advance notice of when their hearing is going to be. So June 1st is the first practical date for ARB formal hearings.
Yeah, here's so their concerns.
That's cut the timeline really tight.
Here's what concerns me about this is that hypothetically, as we're talking about this in a rational format, it's one thing. What I'm worried about is what the impact is actually out and in these meetings and the impact for the taxpayer liaison and all of the folks who are actually carrying this work on. Because I don't think it's going to go nearly as smoothly for them as we think it will go if we set up this timeline we've been discussing.
My inclination is that the model that we have, while flawed, it's nowhere near as broken as what we're trying to do up here, shooting from the hip. Right, so I mean, I think we make the tweaks that we need to make, and I think we're close, but we just need to figure out which elements we want to see. I like where Tom's model's coming from.
My friendly amendment to yours, to your what you're proposing is that we have informals from April 1st through May 15th, and then. But do not change. You still, the appraiser has the option to accept a recommendation, make a recommendation when they meet with the taxpayer. Or they wait until, they have to wait until after May 15th.
Yeah, the reason we want May 15th in there is because of the fact that the May 15th through June 1st is the review of the appraiser's recommendations.
Correct.
Not that the recommendation is made on May 15th. It can be made not to the taxpayer, but just to the chief appraiser at the time he hears the case.
But there's a 15-day scheduling window in there where it needs to be noticed by, right?
Yeah.
So if we're saying until... Yeah.
It is confusing.
Well, it is confusing, but, you know, it's we're trying to get some way to get them face-to-face back in the process.
Right.
I mean, I have no problems with it being all online, but everybody doesn't want to get there yet. So during the next few years, there will be a lot of people that want to have that face-to-face, and so we're just trying to give them an opportunity to do it without stopping the only legal process, which is the appraisal review board. That's the legal requirement. What we're doing now is just trying to do it for a taxpayer's relationship.
And I'd be open to hearing from the taxpayer liaison, too, if you wanted to open up to that. I know, you know, we're not trying to shoot from the hip here. I think we're all trying to do the best solution.
I'd like to hear from Myra. And how do you feel about doing informals in the 45-day period? And you, the appraiser knows, I have a lot of faith in your appraisers, and they have that option to say yes after you submitted this, all your documentation and your data, and I look at mine, okay, I have this recommendation for you. Do you accept it or not? If you have something that is more intense and complicated, I cannot make a recommendation, I cannot come to that, we're going to have a period after May 15th who will respond to
I think that we need to have better review than we've had in the past of the decisions that the appraisers are making at an informal level. And so long as we're allowing ourselves an opportunity to do that review and oversight, I think that the division directors and managers can identify which appraisers it would be suitable to give them the authority to make on-the-spot recommendations, and which appraisers need to have their decisions reviewed. I do think anytime, again, Mr. Teglich has a good point, anytime you're face-to-face, there is always going to be pressure put on the appraiser to make on-the-spot decisions that may not be appropriate. And again, that's where we have to, as managers, provide them an opportunity and have oversight to ensure that that's not occurring.
And I'd be concerned that we'd see a lawsuit that says, these people got their appraisals adjusted this day, and these people didn't. Yeah. And I feel like that's a concern I have of having that standard. I know it makes a lot of sense. That's just my concern.
We would have a lot of comparisons going on. This person got X number of offers this day, and this person didn't get any, or, you know, those kind of lawsuits are always
Mr. Chair.
Difficult to deal with.
I wonder if we might ask the taxpayer liaison's reaction to this discussion.
Sure thing.
I didn't know he was here.
He's here.
This is a very complicated issue, obviously, given the fact that you've had so much discussion about it. The problem is, I think, whatever decision is being made, that we do a really good job of making sure we communicate that to the general public. A big problem I had with taxpayers this last year was they did not understand about the e-file process, how that works. They didn't feel like there was enough time to get their evidence in. There was a misunderstanding, I think, about the process, but I think it's an important process. It could do a lot to help with the informal process. But I think we have to do a really outstanding job of communicating what we're doing. And so however we resolve this issue here, which is an important issue, we've got to make sure we have a good communication plan in place.
Do you have a sense of how it would be received from taxpayers if they don't walk out of an informal meeting?
I think they'd be very upset.
Value. Thank you.
I think they're going to be very upset, and I'm going to get a whole lot of telephone calls.
Their expectation would be, if I go to informal, I should get a settlement.
I should get an offer. If I go to informal, I should get an offer right there. I mean, I'm looking for a resolution. I don't want to wait for 5 days. I want an answer right now. I think we have to have a process in place that resolves the issue, like, right now. Any other questions?
Well, that's the problem. You're putting control back in the taxpayer, not in the decision maker, which is the appraisal board. We're supposed to be getting to true values, not on who gets a shops for an appraiser or intimidates an appraiser or, you know, whether you call it consistency or honesty or anything. You need to have the ability to have a good decision come out.
Well, I agree, but the question was, well, how would the taxpayer react? And I was answering that question.
Okay.
Yeah, I would think that every meeting would have to start out with, we are not going to set up, this is an information gathering meeting, we are not going to set values here. That happens this way.
So it's not an informal hearing.
It's a non-informal hearing. That's right.
Well,
it's
informal.
But to answer your question about the process, the taxpayer has got to feel like whatever offer they get is, in fact, a fair market value of the property.
Yes.
Well, so they understand that the process, whatever process is in place, did generate a fair market value to them. And again, it comes down to the communication issue here. This is so important, communication to the taxpayer. We've got to do a good job of making sure they understand the process and how all this works.
Thank you.
I'd like to have Karen Everson with Everson Sanchez, our legal, weigh in with any recommendations based on everything that she's heard.
Sure.
First, thank you for considering it, because this is a tough issue, and I think it's helpful for the community, those folks that are here, to be able to hear y'all discussing this. So thank you, first. The second thing is, I always look at it from, so understand my perspective is, how to avoid lawsuits. And I think making a rule and sticking to it consistently is going to be how you avoid the lawsuits. So if the rule is going to be, we're not going to be making offers during the face-to-face informals. And I do think it is an informal. I mean, I think that just because someone doesn't get a settlement on the table doesn't diminish the fact that they're able to come in and speak with someone with the district. One of the concerns I heard when the tax agents came, and were speaking to the board of directors was, I can show you all these examples where there were errors that were committed. And if we don't allow face-to-face, you know, you're not seeing those. And so I think this process, while maybe the resolution doesn't occur in that room at that moment, it still is productive. And it still is another concern that was raised by the tax agent was, what about those people out there that don't understand the process? How do I don't know what my notice of appraised value means. Can someone explain to me what 065 is or HS? Those may be very evident to the folks in this room, but it may not be evident to your mother or your sibling that's coming in to look at their notice of appraised value. So these are very productive, even if it's not resolved at that moment. That addresses several of the concerns that were raised during the public comments on this. My preference, this is from the avoiding the lawsuit, is that you do not, my preference would be, as Mr. Staglich said, which is everyone goes through the same process. You come in, you discuss, here's the problem, here's what you missed, here's what I'd like you to consider, here's why I think your value is wrong. The district then takes that number, and whether it's a very experienced appraiser or a brand new appraiser, they take notes, they ask questions, they engage, they explain, oh, here's what this line means on your notice of appraised value, here's what the process is going to look like, and we will be back in touch with you after we have an opportunity to review this. I think that sometimes you have very simple questions, so if you are going to create a division, it would be if something's based on an error, an omission, almost like we have clerical error lawsuits, versus a value opinion. Because appraisal work is, it's an educated analysis. So it still is someone deriving an opinion on facts. So to give someone time to analyze that and make an opinion, and then make sure that opinion is not just that individual's opinion, but represents the opinion of an agency. That just that D deep breath. We've met with you. We've given you information you want. We've corrected errors. But the taking a deep breath, taking a moment, and doing it correctly and consistently, I think is where you're going to have the ability to reduce the number of lawsuits based on I'm being treated differently than someone else. So.
Thank you.
If you have questions, let me.
I think we've reached a consensus.
I have one more question. How many Spanish-speaking appraisers do you have that have years of experience?
I count eight. I believe, yes.
We've gotten to the stage that a person told me 20 years ago that everybody needs to speak both English and Spanish at this thing.
Another language.
Can you walk me through the... So, I hear everything you just said. The offer gets sent after the fact, okay? What is the process for me as a property owner of accepting that offer? Because my issue is all the steps that we're creating and the opportunity for those, for a task that historically was concluded in one take to fall through the cracks in all those steps. So what does that look like for me as a property owner to accept the offer after the fact? Do I need to, because historically I think you signed something in the...
Right, you sign something at the end of the settlement.
Yeah.
If you're not doing that, then you're not getting a signature, so they can still
sue
us.
So what's the process of getting that offer accepted after the fact?
Those that have access to the Internet can go through the portal and do the accept online and accept it online. I think those that do not have access to the Internet, we would send them a mailer with a portion that they would sign and return to the appraisal district. And that would be a process that we could do for those that don't have Internet access.
I don't think that will be very efficient. I mean, at the end of the day, we need to be more productive, and if it can't arrive at a settlement at that time.
I still think the expectation from the public, as I hear it, as I just walk around, is that when someone goes to an informal, they have the expectation that it's going to be settled at that hearing. And so... I think the vast majority of the citizens would leave their informal, get the document in the mail after the fact, and I think, I don't know what the loss rate would be on that, but I don't think we get back 100 of 100. You know, I mean, there's going to be some margin there that we lose. And those are the ones that I'm concerned about.
I mean, what's the loss rate right now with the electronic file and submit everything online? Then assuming they get notice in the email that, oh, here's what the offer was, if there was any change.
Great. That's a great point. So, like, well, when that's a great point. So when you send the informal offer via e-file back to the client, can we get the data on I guess that wouldn't even accurately depict it because you might not even like the offer, right? So there's no indication that...
Yeah, if you don't like the offer, yeah. You don't you say no, you just ignore it.
Yeah.
What happens?
So you just ignore it, so that wouldn't even help us.
I think so long as we finalize and make our offers, and we do that before we submit the records to the appraisal review board, whatever offer we make could stand as the value without waiting for an appraiser, a taxpayer to accept. They would only need to notify us if they would reject that so that we would know to schedule them for a formal hearing.
Wait, say that one more time. I'm sorry.
So we make we go ahead and make the change in our system. If there's an offer to be made, we make the change in our system of that amount that is going to be offered. We don't necessarily have to wait for a property owner to sign off in agreement on that offer. That becomes the value of the appraisal district. And we consider it an informal settlement because we met with them. They offered it. And that if they reject that offer, they could come back and tell us so that they get scheduled for a formal hearing. Karen, what do you think is the issues that we might incur from that? This is off the top of my head, so I've got to get
So no response means they accept it.
It becomes
So hypothetically, so I'm walking through this as a hypothetical. Let's say hypothetically the original noticed value in April is $100. Yes, that's just a number playing with. I don't know if we send out notices of $100. The notice would go out at $100. You have the face-to-face informal. The appraiser then goes through the review process, you know, the in-house analysis, and then they say, dear property owner, we would be willing to settle this at $95. Please sign the settlement and waiver form, and we'll mark it off. But regardless of whether you get the settlement and waiver back, the appraisal district would change its records. Is that the proposed?
Potentially, yeah.
Change its records to 95. So even if the property owner didn't accept the 95, it would still go to through the appraisal review board process, but instead of the disputed amount being $100, it's now down to 95. So you would still have an appraisal review board hearing that would need to be scheduled, because unless you have the acceptance from the property owner, they would, their protest would still be valid.
Historically, when you didn't accept an informal offer face-to-face and you chose to go to ARB, the basis amount rolled back to what the notification amount was, correct? Mm-hmm. So what you're proposing now is if it goes to an ARB, it would potentially be reduced. Is that what I'm hearing? Or
it takes all the gamesmanship out of it.
Yeah.
You know, right. So the informal, if they're persuasive, we adjust our values. And we go to...
There's no informals.
No.
There'll
be an offer made.
Informational.
Well, no. If it'll be a recommendation to the taxpayer as to what they would be willing to reduce the value to. So it is an informal decision. It's just not made at that informational hearing.
It's an informal because it wouldn't trigger a change otherwise, right? Like if you didn't show up, it wouldn't trigger an offer.
So certainly makes a lot of sense to me. It seems like the honest way to approach this. If you're willing to reduce the value, reduce it.
Some of the pros and cons. The pros are if the appraisal district is making a decision that the value should be lowered, first, we already know it's going to be based on evidence, right? It's not just, I can get rid of 10 cases if I settle with you on this one. It has to be based on documented evidence. That's a pro. In addition, there's also the idea that the district is going to rely on objective evidence. Whether you come in and argue or not, if we have objective evidence that supports it, great. So those are the pros. The cons are, of course, that you've gone through this process and you still are having to set the appraisal review board hearings because you don't know, in my hypothetical of $100 value, then going down to a recognized $95 value, great, we've got the documents to support that. Because it's also critical you understand that appraisal district has to respond to the comptroller's office as well.
Sure.
Is there support for changing those values? So the con would be then if you lower the value based on evidence that was brought in during the informal face-to-face, and you stick with that once you get to the formal appraisal review board hearing, you may end up scheduling, the appraisal review board may end up scheduling a lot of hearings that don't come to fruition because then people at the last minute say, you know what, they gave me that 5% reduction, is it worth going in? They don't tell the district in advance because they don't have that paper in front of them to sign the settlement waiver. So that would be a con on scheduling, but jump in if I'm wrong, but I believe that it's better for an appraisal review board to find out they've scheduled 100 and only have 50 show up rather than over-schedule 100 and have all 100 show up.
Yeah,
so
they would have to factor in a no-show percentage.
And they do. The appraisal review board usually is very good about anticipating that. But and I'm not saying this is really... quick to analyze this on the fly, but I think that's what you were suggesting is if there's documented support for a reduction, then stick with that reduction, whether or not you get the signed settlement.
Let me ask you that. You do have that in your information that if there is evidence, but shouldn't they only be making the decision even with evidence?
Oh, there should always be evidence.
There should always be evidence.
There should always be evidence.
And if there is no evidence, then maybe that should be reviewed, right? If they don't attach anything to it, then it should be escalated to management that, hey, there was no evidence, but the appraiser just made it. That should be a red flag to you guys that, hey, why did they change this without any supporting evidence? So that almost doesn't even need to be said, but it's kind of odd that you have it there.
Well, in the interest of moving us back to focus upon the items we need to give to Maria so she can actually come up with a policy recommendation that we are able to vote upon, and just in that interest only, I move that we would accept Ryan's description of how the informal hearing would work.
Informal process, I'll second that.
And I would like to add what Tom said about accepting the value. I'd like to understand the pros and cons of that, because I think we need to give you guys some time to understand and come with a recommendation. Does that make sense, or does some other operational method make sense?
I would also like to know if any other CAD in the state of Texas does anything like that, if we can find that.
Well, most appraisal districts will not.
Yeah.
Because
that's what I'm assuming.
If the informal doesn't work out, then their attitude is, we're going to go back to the higher value.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, and like it or not, a lot of these cases get settled without additional evidence.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of these, because you have these kind of isolated appraiser with a property owner and behind closed doors, documented evidence isn't always there. A lot of times it's look me deep in the eyes and trust me.
Well, there's a motion on the floor with a second, and that is to simply conduct the informal hearing in the way that Ryan has proposed. And I said ahead of time I'm doing that simply to try and move us ahead so we could get a vote on that and know whether that's good or whether we need to move somewhere else.
Can we restate exactly what
I have got to leave, so if we can just vote on the motion that's been made and seconded, it's in the minutes and it'll be in. Are you recording?
Well, Mariah has her recommendation, which is different from Ryan's original, which is saying.
And this vote, Bruce, to your point, this vote is to not put it in force, but to.
No, this is just
create language
right in that, just like we had today.
I presume if this motion were voted down, it would then be followed by another one, and the object is to be able to give Maria some direction. I mean, we've had a great discussion, but I don't know what she's going to pick out of the air, you know, to put in writing for us, unless we zero in on some things here.
So does everybody understand Ryan's proposal? Because it sounds like we're conflating it with Tom's proposal.
No, I'm
different.
Not conflating it with anything. My
motion
was to accept Ryan's proposal, period, as it's written.
Oh, as it's written. Okay, which is...
It's the only proposal.
No decision is made at the informal meeting at all.
That's correct.
Correct.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Three. Motion passes.
Did I miss a hand over here?
I got three again.
You were a yes. And I didn't vote.
Well, then, one
is eight.
Maybe we could do a quick recount.
No, it should be 3-4. Because we didn't vote. It was basically.
But he abstained. So yeah. Did Tom vote for it?
Yeah. Tom voted for it.
Yeah. 4-3. 4-3-1.
No. The one abstained. No.
Against. Against.
I was 4.
You were 4. Okay. 4-3.
4-3-1.
4-3.
Oh, well, let me confuse it.
If we're confused, imagine the public.
The next item on the agenda is item 6B, discussion and possible action on appointment of the Ag Advisory Board.
And this is an annual agenda item that we do every year for our Ag Advisory Board.
If
it gives the district a...
Yeah, if I could interfere for just a moment, with my apologies to the chair. The point of my motion was not to tell Maria to please go away and incorporate this. It was to get a sense of where this board was. I did not mean to close off, you know, all discussion, and I wasn't certain that we didn't have more discussion on this item still to go. No?
I agree. I think there's going to be a lot more discussion when it comes back.
Okay. Well, I'll leave it at that then, so my apologies.
And I think we should meet real soon about this and not wait till next month.
Right.
It's very crucial.
Yeah.
Very important.
And we could have a one-item meeting, I presume.
Yes.
Can we do it before the 27th?
Yes. We need to do it because we need to put this issue to bed so that we can move forward.
I'm sorry.
No, it's good. So 6B, the Ag Advisory Board.
Mm-hmm. So we've got two members that are up for reappointment, Maury Potu and Larry Mellenbrook. They've previously served on our Ag Advisory Board. Their terms expired at the end of 2019, so they're up for reappointment, and we just asked the board to reappoint those two members back to our Ag Advisory. And we've included bios of specifically those two members, but of all our Ag Advisory Board members. In your packet, it's on page 61.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion passes.
And the next item is a approval of a GIS contract for professional services. This is a third party that would help us with our mapping in GIS. They would actually do the digitizing of the data. Our staff would still do the internal PACS data update, but this is a supplemental staff that would help us with our GIS needs and requirements.
And how are we paying for this now? What's the contract for the service now?
So the service that we used to do this all in-house, but we had our staff members got scooped out from underneath of us by a developer?
Government agency.
Another government agency. So we pretty much lost our GIS staff, save for one staff member. So this is finding people with the skill set necessary to do this work has not been something that we could do, and we are better off going with a third-party service to provide this service to the district and do that digitizing of our GIS maps.
So this would allow us to save from backfilling that headcount also?
Okay. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Just for information only, could you kind of list some of the primary functions that GIS would perform?
Sure. So these are jobs that require skills and knowledge in ESRI software, which is a geographical information software. And they would take the plats that get submitted by the developers as they're developing new land. The lots get created. We have one big parcel. They would actually digitize and create the parcels based on those plats, you know, splits, merges, those kind of things. They actually do the digitizing. Our staff will still take that data, and then they create the accounts within our software database. But the creating of the maps themselves in GIS would be done by this third-party group.
Okay, so it's primarily maps and plats we're talking about. They're
yes.
not collecting other kinds of things.
No, it's strictly maps and plats.
Why is the second year so much lower?
Because it's a February 1 contract, so it'll end. The only 2021 will be January of 2021.
Okay, so is it for 2 years?
It's a one-year contract.
It's a one-year contract. Okay, just divide it up.
Because our start date is starting January 1st or February 1st. So we'll come back to you next year with a 2021 starting February 1st, 2021, in the month of January in 2022. Or we'll try to sync it up so we get a January 1st syncing.
Okay. We have a motion. Any further discussion?
Okay.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes. Next item is 6D.
6D is just we've got reserve monies in reserve for legal expenses and legal fees, and we're just asking for the authorization to use the money from the reserves to pay legal expenses and fees for 2019.
This doesn't mean we have $1.7 million in legal fees. We're just putting it in reserves.
No, this is using the money that is currently in reserves to pay legal fees. And we've got $1.75 million in legal fees.
So we actually do have $1.7 million in legal fees.
Yeah. Any discussion on that or a motion?
I move approval.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion passes. Six F.
Six E would be next, which would be the chief appraiser report. And just to give you guys an update, we started in January. Cynthia started an outreach program for homestead exemptions. There are quite a few legislative changes that affect homesteads, so we're trying to get the word out to property owners, particularly air property is a new change in legislation where property owners that inherited property but may not have gone through probate can now claim an exemption. It's brand new law that's in place. We also have law in place that would allow property owners to choose whether or not they want to accept a over 65 or disabled person. Used to be they could only claim one or the other. Now it depends on the taxing unit. They can claim an over 65 for the city of Austin and a disabled person for Travis County, depending upon which one gives them the best results. And so we're just making a reach out. We've done a lot of outreach, a lot of media interviews, put more information out on our web and a lot of social media access to that information. We do have a town hall that we're scheduling and planning for February 8th. It'll be something that we'll do in conjunction with the City of Austin and Senator Watson, since Senator Watson was the one that actually sponsored the air property homestead bill. So we're just doing a lot of outreach to property owners, trying to make sure everybody that's entitled to a homestead exemption has an opportunity and has the knowledge so that they can claim their homestead exemption. So that's a big push for us.
Will that be at the Bullock again?
It will be. No, it won't be at the Bullock. It'll be at the Conley Guerrero Center.
Okay.
So we anticipate the air property where we preliminary identified that it's going to be most prevalent is going to be in East and South Austin. And so we're trying to go out into that community and have that outreach in that area so that they can be informed, but they can go to a town hall that is close to where they live. February 8th, it'll be at 10 o'clock. It'll be our start time. Yeah, it's the time that the senator was available. So, but we'll be doing other outreach efforts as well.
That's a Saturday, though.
It's a Saturday.
So that's...
Yeah, it's a Saturday. So that is update on our homestead outreach. Then we are continuing to work with renovation of our new location. We've gotten our site exemption for that. We have a scheduled time for an expedited permit process. That'll be in February 11th. So our goal and our hope is that at that time we can get our permit in hand and they can do a lot of the other major construction work. We've done most of the demo, most of the abatement that we needed to do. Again, we've got a lot of electrical work that came up that we're going to have to do on the renovation on the building. But we'll be start moving rather rapidly after we get the permit, and our goal is and our hope is that we'll have that permit in hand on February 11th.
And what's your kind of ETA of being ready for operation for ARB, or what's the likelihood?
The timeline that we're looking at right now is by the end of May, have the building ready so that we can start ARB hearings June 1st in the new location.
How do you feel about that?
It's looking pretty good for us to make that deadline. If nothing else, they're going to try to permit it by floor, and we will get a permit for the first floor so that we can move in, even though we may not have the permit for the remaining floors. But we have told them to specifically target and focus to get us ready so that we can be back in facilities for next year for the ARB process. And then items 6, F, and G will need to take up an executive session.
Is there something I read from to take us into executive session? Do I cite a specific?
Yes. On the second side of the page, the board may meet in executive session to deliberate any matter authorized by Texas Government Code 551.001, and specifically we are going to be looking at Section 551.071, consultation with the attorney regarding pending or contemplated litigation, settlement offers, and matters on which the attorney has a duty to advise the board under the Texas Disciplinary Rules of Professional Conduct of the State Bar of Texas.
Thank you for that. The regular meeting and enter executive session at 1:20. Let's say 72 hours in advance of that meeting, and it can be worked into the main motion or language that gets brought forward to us. Is there a point of contact on staff that we can advise the board to send any?
Send it to me.
Okay.
And then what we'll do is we will compile all the suggestions and recommendations and maybe put it in a cafeteria style ballot for you guys to select the options of, and you can just go through them item by item, and
formulate
your final motion.
Because you were just trying to move the conversation on and get us in the level of basis, but I think there was just a
recommendation based on the motion that we passed.
Yes.
We'll come forward to the choice being amended at that time.
Yes, absolutely.
But if you have suggestions, you can
bring them in. Suggestions, but your analysis of how it worked out, I would really like to see. That was kind of my understanding, not just present to us, hey, here's all the options. I think that we can kind of work through and make sure, because it's going to be about finance and our schedule, kind of like run the traps on it. I want to do that to make sure we don't recommend a policy.
And the only reason I'm saying send it off in advance is because when we get our a packet in advance of the meeting, I want everyone to be able to come to the meeting with the understanding that we have these 7 or 8 things we're looking at, and they've had time to kind of digest what the implications of passing or not passing any of those items would be.
Okay. So we're using the motion that was passed today as our launching point.
Yes.
And then we're doing add-on options of what we can do in addition and how that would actually look like moving forward. In order to give you guys an opportunity to provide any recommendations or suggestions and have that published and put out online, we probably need to move that meeting, because if we do it on the 21st, I would need to get it from you guys.
Like by the end of the week or something?
By Wednesday, so that I could get an agenda posted for the next meeting. So we may want to look at the week following, unless you guys think that that's enough time for you to give the
I think we would all be able to get enough.
What if you sent an email to each of us and said, invited that feedback by Wednesday, so it reminds us that, you know, while we're still thinking about it, maybe it's even better, be a little fresh, and then we get it to you by Wednesday, we can still have the meeting on Tuesday. Because I do think time is of the essence.
Okay. And also, Maria, I mean, you're the one that's going to be living with this, so we're looking to your recommendation.
Okay.
Do not do an invitation.
A
reminder.
Reminder that.
Because now she's doing what y'all have asked her to do.
Yeah.
As opposed to if she sends an invitation,
got it. Yep. So.
I don't even
Maria, could you send me a reminder?
A reminder.
Or, just somebody send a reminder so that we all are reminded that we have feedback till Wednesday.
Okay.
Any further discussion? We have a motion for, yeah. I think from that meeting we'll schedule. Yeah. All those in favor of? I think I heard a second.
Good.
Okay. Okay. The board of directors stands adjourned at 2:30.
Okay.
Now I'm good.
Do it! Come on.
No, right.
Okay.
First meeting again.
Yes, sir.
Hi. Yes. I watched the item that they voted to pass after the executive session 6F contract to legal services. I didn't hear a complete motion.